Okay, welcome to Bosai. The goal for today is to cover as much as we can in the very little time that we have. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be going through, I don't think we're going to be able to do all the shiurim today. Chances are there will be a need for a shorter review session after this. We'll see how much we do, but I doubt we'll be able to do everything. We're going to go through the shiurim. Some shiurim will be the shiurim that are a little bit heavier, we're going to spend more time on. The shiurim that are a little bit lighter and less information, we'll spend just a minute or two or three on. Most of what we will do now, the goal of what we're doing now is to take something that is a shiur, you're sort of not sure what's important, what's not important, you're not sure what the main points are, is to sort of collect the main points, focus on, sometimes it's a shiur that might have six or seven areas, focus on the main two or three or four areas of that shiur. This, what we do today, will cover a large majority of what will be on the final Be'ezus Hashem next Tuesday. In addition to that, if you have your own notes, I do urge you to look at your own notes to fill in. But this will hopefully, if you look at these review, your notes from this review class with your notes, then it will sort of tell you what you have to pay more attention to. That's my goal. So let's begin Lav Dafka in the order of the shiurim that we actually heard, but let's start with the shiur from Rabbi Konigsberg on Hilchas Sukkah. First of all, there was a discussion of whether Sukkah needs to be, the Gemara talks about if it needs to be Arai or Keva, and of course, even if you hold that it needs to be Arai, it doesn't actually need to be Arai, it just has to be Roilios Arai. And therefore, they have to be Pachas Mi'asrim Amma. The walls have to be Pachas Mi'asrim Amma, but the Schach, it's not enough to be Roilios Arai, it has to be Arai Mamish. Let's talk about the size of a Sukkah. There's a three-way machlokas in the Mishnayis, how big a Sukkah has to be. The Shami holds, you need Rosho Verubo plus Shulchano. That extra tafach will make it 7x7. Hillel holds, you only need Rosh HaVerubo, that's going to be 6 Tvachim by 6 Tvachim. And Rebbe holds that you actually have to have a Dires Keva, has to have a Din Bayis, and therefore it has to be 4 Amos by 4 Amos. Now, we paskin like Beis Shammai, it's one of the 18 cases that we pass like Beis Shammai, not Beis Hillel. So, Halacha L'maisa, a Sukkah must be 6 Tvachim by 6 Tvachim. Now, in terms of the shape of the Sukkah, we pass like Beis Shammai, that, 7x7. Thank you. Yeah, mistake on the notes. Thank you very much. In terms of the shape of the sukkah, we know the Gemara tells us that you could have Stein Kehilchasan, or Shlishas Afil Tafach, so it's somewhat of a misnomer, because people think, they learned the Gemara, so all you need is Stein Kehilchasan, or Shlishas Afil Tafach, but that's only when the two walls that you have, the full wall, is like a gam, like an L, and the third tefach, that tefach for the third wall, is lovered to one of those two sides of the L that you have. So this way, you'll have two walls, and then a third wall that's adjacent to it, which is a tefach, but that tefach is put lovered within three tefachim of the existing wall, so that means there's 3.9 tefachim, because you have one wall, plus lovered is 2.9 tefachim, you have 3.9 tefachim, now you have rove of the wall that you need, the 7x7 wall that you need. So that's when we apply the kula of shlishus afil tefach. And besides that, when you use this rule of shlishus afil tefach, you will have to also have a tzuras tefach. Again, you're going to have that one tefach for the third wall, lovered to one of the perpendicular walls, and you'll also have to add a tzuras hapesach for the rest of the wall to get this kula of the shlishus afil tefach. That whole halacha of shlishus afil tefach, that's only if the third wall is only a tefach. But once that third wall will be zayin tefachim, the shiur of a sukkah, then you don't have to worry about anything else. It doesn't have to be adjacent to the perpendicular wall. You don't need you don't need lavud, and you don't need the atzuras hapesach. So halacha l'maisa, the easiest way to get a shlishus afil tefach is let the third wall be a full 7 tefachim, and you will not need any of the other details of shlishus afil tefach. That's in terms of the size and the shape. Let's now talk about Davar HaMekabel Tuma. Can I, with specific application to canvas sukkahs, can I rest my schach on top of a Davar HaMekabel Tuma? So, the Gemara does not mention being somech, putting schach on a Mekabel Tuma. It talks about putting my schach on Kare Hamita, on the boards of a bed, which is a machlokes Tanoim. The Tanakhama says it's kosher entirely. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's pasul. Now, why is it pasul? In the Gemara, there's a machlokas, either because if the sukkah is sitting on the walls of the bed, it's ein lakeva. You might come to use the bed or something, and the schach won't be there. The sukkah won't be there for you. So it's ein lakeva. Or the other side is that you're being mamid b'davar hamekabel tuma. So we have a machlokas tanoim whether there is a problem of using kari hamita. Within Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's pasul. There's a machlokas why it's pasul, and one of those two reasons why Rabbi Yehuda pasuls kari hamita is because that is davar hamekabel tuma. That you're being mamid the schach on top of a davar hamekabel tuma on those bedposts. Now, why does this reason say that Mamid B'davar HaMekabel Tuma is Aser at all? So here we have an important machlokas Rishonim between the Ran and Rashi. Rashi says that whatever is holding up the Schach, let me rephrase that, whatever the Schach is, how do we look at the Schach? We look at the Schach by whatever is holding up the Schach. If what's holding up the Schach is Mekabel Tuma, it's as though the Schach itself is Mekabel Tuma. That Rashi is assuming that Mamid B'davar HaMekabel Tuma is a psul mi de'oraisa. However, the Ran says no. The whole problem with Mamid B'davar HaMekabel Tuma is that if somebody sees me being Mamid B'davar HaMekabel Tuma, they might think that I could actually be Mesachech B'davar HaMekabel Tuma. And therefore, I should not be Mamid, so I don't come to actually be Mesachech B'davar HaMekabel Tuma. So, according, again, we have machlokas, if there is a problem of kayamita, according to Rabbi Yehuda that there is a problem, it's machlokas what the problem is. According to the tzad that is a mekabel tuma, we have a machlokas what the psul of mekabel tuma is, whether it's a psul, the rabbanon, or the oraisa. So how do we hold in all of those machlokasim? Most poskim hold that, we probably pass like Rabbi Yehuda, the kayamita is psul, but because of which reason? Is it because of the first reason that it's Ein Lakeva, or because of Mamid B'davar HaMekabel Tuma? So here, the Shulchan Aruch actually holds, not from the reason of Davar HaMekabel Tuma, that you're Mamid B'davar HaMekabel Tuma, rather that other reason that it's Ein Lakeva. And therefore, according to the Shulchan Aruch, if we stop here, there's no halacha in Shulchan Aruch about Davar being Mesachich, and supporting the Sfach with Davar HaMekabel Tuma. Other Rishonim say that we paskin that the reason why Rabbi Yehuda asers Kari Hamita is because of Davar HaMekabel Tuma. So according to those Rishonim, I will not be able to put my Sfach directly on the metal beams according to those Rishonim. But according to the Shulchan Aruch, it sounds like I can. Except. There's another Shulchan Aruch somewhere else who does not use the word Tuma, but he talks about, in a different place, a suffix, he's mesupik, whether you could use a ladder to hold the schach up. What is this suffix? The Mogen Avram explains that suffix of the Shulchan Aruch, whether you could use a ladder to hold up the schach, is actually a suffix, whether or not yilechatchila, you have to be machmir for mamid b'davar hamekabel tuma. That if mamid b'davar hamekabel tuma is a problem, so therefore a ladder which is mekabel tuma should not be the something that's holding up your schach. Says the Magen Avram, the Shulchan Aruch was makel over there. Here he's machmir misafik. Why is there this double standard in the Shulchan Aruch? Says the Magen Avram, because the Shulchan Aruch is telling you that lichat chila, you should be machmir and try to avoid being mesache, being mamid. But davar hamekabel tuma. But mikra hadin, if you were mamid the schach, but davar hamekabel tuma, it will be kosher. So that's Magen Avram's way of understanding all the different halachas put together. Now, in that Magen Avram, where he says that lechatchila you should avoid mamid b'davar hamekabel tuma, the Magen Avram adds, but if you have an extra hefsek between the mamid and the schach, you put a piece of plastic, a piece of wood, on top of So something between the Davar HaMekabel Tumah and the actual Stach, then that will solve the problem. Now that's the cool of the Magen Avraham, who says that you should avoid this Mamer Davar HaMekabel Tumah L'chatchila. If you have an extra hefsek, meaning it's a Mamed Demamed of the Schach, that will be okay. Now the Chazon Ish himself holds that there is no problem of a Mamed B'Davar HaMekabel Tumah at all, even regular Mamed. But he holds, according to you, Mr. Magen Avraham, that there is a problem of Mamed, B'Davar HaMekabel Tumah, a second Mamed will not help you. Mamed Deman will not help you, and that's the Chumrah of the Chazon Ish, that even though the Chazon Ish himself holds that there's no psul even of Mamed, but he holds, according to those who are Machmir for Mamed, like the Magen Avraham, then even a second Mamed will not help you. Let's shift away from Mamed B'Davar HaMekabel Tumah, and now we will talk about, so Halach L'maisa, if you end up going to a canvas sukkah where there is no hefsek, and you see the schach is sitting directly on the metal beams, Mi'ikar Hadin, it is kosher, and if you're making your own, you should put a hefsek there. But Mi'ikar Hadin, you can make a bracha. If you go to a hotel that's a canvas sukkah with the, we'll talk about the canvas later, but the stock sitting directly on the metal, Mi'ikar Hadin, it is kosher, and you can make a bracha. Let's now talk about the stock being made out of mats. Let's talk about mats. So the Gemara, the Mishnah, Mefurish, discusses machtsalos, and it says that if the machtsalos are made for sitting on them, then they're mekabel tumah, and of course they're pasul for schach. If, however, they're made for schach, then they're not mekabel tumah, and they're kosher for mats. Now, there is a different issue regarding mats besides what the Mishnah talks about, and that's because there's a Gemara that talks about Gzeiras Tikra. Gzeiras Tikra says that if you have planks of schach that are more than 4 tefachim, they're pasul, because even if they're made out of wood, because this Gzeiras Tikra, it's going to look like a roof. And on that din of Gzeiras Tikra, there's a Rashba who writes that even if they're not planks that are 4 tefachim wide, but they're thin pieces of wood that are attached to now be 4 tefachim wide, that also will constitute a Gzeiras Tikra. Accordingly, Rabbi Yashiv says that mats, which are more certainly more than those 4 tefachim, are going to have this psil Gzeiras Tikra. At least at some point, Rabbi Yashiv did say that therefore mats would be a problem. Could be that he was chozer later on, that they say, but there are many poskim who disagree and are mekel and say that our mats will not have a problem of Gzeiras Tikra. So they're not going to have a problem of mekabel tumah that we mentioned a moment ago, a minute or two ago, because all the mats that we have now for schach are made expressly for schach, and therefore they're not mekabel tumah. But the second problem of Gzeiras Tikra is solved in three different ways. First of all, the mats do allow rain coming through them, as opposed to a tikra, which is somewhat impregnable to the rain, and therefore it's not like a roof that is going to keep the rain out. Secondly, Rav Shlomo Zalman says that even if you are worried that, you know, the small things put together will make it like a tikra, but here they're so flim, they're so flimsy and thin, you're not going to say Gzeiras Tikra on something that is so flimsy and thin. The third reason is that our mats are made out of bamboo, and no one makes roofs of houses nowadays out of bamboo, and therefore for all these three reasons, the bamboo mats that we use are not dumya to a tikra, so there will not be a problem of Gzeiras Tikra. That you'd lose that. That's sniflahaka. Keep in mind when a person is making canvas sukkah, and there's a psul of tasev lomin ha'asay. So, for example, let's say you want to build the frame, and then put the schach on top for whatever reason, and only lastly put on the canvas walls. There, you will have the problem of tasev lomin ha'asay, which is a psul. Okay, let's just talk about the walls of canvas themselves, and that will be the end for the halacha is that a mechitza she'ena omedes beruach mitzuya is not a mechitza. It doesn't have to withstand a hurricane, but has to be able to be omi beruach mitzuya. The question is, how much does it have to... There are some who hold that even if it moves back a little bit, that itself calls that it means that it's not omid, beruach mitzuya. But the Chazon Ish says, he's making and says, as long as it doesn't move three tefachim, then it will still be considered a mechitza. If it moves, shifts more than three tefachim, that will be mevatel the shem mechitza. However, there is a chumrah of the Shulchan Aruch for Ashita Rabbeinu Peretz, who says that you should not use sedinim, even if they're very tight and they don't move at all, but you should not use sedinim, curtains, because they were worried they might disattach and they might actually start flapping around. According to that chumrah of Rabbeinu Peretz, according to this opinion of Rabbeinu Peretz, you cannot use canvas walls, period. However, if you do want to use the canvas walls, you could always take strings and run the strings around, love it to each other, three or four strings from the ground, love it to each other, three tefachim high, until you get to the shir mechitz of ten tefachim, and those strings will be your wall, and then the canvas walls are not halakhic walls, they're just the tzniyus ba'alma, not actually for a din mechitza, to fulfill that chumrah of Rabbeinu Peretz. Rabbi Shechter, give me one second, Rabbi Shechter actually holds that nowadays, when the canvas walls are made, they're not just curtains. You didn't just take, a curtain from your windows and put it on your sukkah. They're actually made with grommets and things to tie down, and it's made for this. Maybe there wouldn't be this concern of Rabbeinu Peretz. Let's just give you... Okay. When it comes to the schach pasul passels for tefachim, even though avir only is pasul even for three tefachim. The reason why that avir is more chomer, it could be that avir is more nicker than schach pasul. So a smaller amount, even only three tefachim, could pasul avir. Now, schach pasul only pasuls if you have schach pasul that's less than four tefachim, you're actually allowed to sit underneath it, which a lot of people don't realize. However, if you have avir that's less than three tefachim, you're not allowed to sit under avir that's less than three tefachim. But when do we say that you can't sit under avir that's less than three tefachim? That's only if the avir is al pnei kulo. There's a strip through the width of the sukkah of that avir, then you're not allowed to sit underneath that. But if you always put some kind of perpendicular piece of wood to cut off any avir al pnei kulo, that will be very helpful for your sukkah without getting into more details. Okay, that's the end of the first shiur of sukkah. That was a long one. From here on in, they won't be as long. The next one I'll talk about is Rabbi Neuberger's shiur about Hilchas Yom Tov. So let's talk about using gas stoves and Yom Tov Sheni. Those will be the two topics. Regarding gas stoves, what we have to know is that lighting a fire on Yom Tov is mutar midaraisa, but also midrabanan. Why is lighting a fire on Yom Tov also midrabanan? Here we have a machlokas rishonim. Rashi says that, let's start with the Rambam. The Rambam says that it's that when we allow things midaraisa because of ochel nefesh, we only allow things that could not have, that you couldn't do yesterday. Iyav shalat sosa me'asmo. But a fire, you could have... a fire, which you could have done yesterday, make it again. You shouldn't make it today, because you could have had your fire sitting from yesterday. That's the Rambam's reason. Rashi's reason is that there's a new takana called molid. Chazal made up this new halacha called molid that you're not allowed to be molded an eish on Yom Tov. It's a new takana called molded. Now, when we have a pilot light on a gas stove, like most of us in the Heights have, you're only being mamshich the flame, you're not being molded the flame. So therefore, you're going to be able to be mamshich the flame. So whenever you have a pilot light, you can always turn on the oven on Yom Tov to cook, because there's a pilot light there, you're just being mamshich the flame. Now, if you have an electric igniter, that's going to be a problem, because the electric igniter sparks and starts the fire. That will be molid. And even if you have the coils, that could be a problem, because when you change the coils, it's not just making it hotter. Saying that you have a little hot, now it's becoming hotter. A lot of times the different coils, or the different heat intensities of those coils, are separate circuits. You turn off one, so let's say I switch it from flame 2 to flame 4, it's not just more heat, more electricity, it's actually turning off one circuit, turning off the circuit for heat 2, and turning on a different circuit for heat number 4. Now let's talk about Shabbos mode ovens. Shabbos mode ovens is a great thing that the Star K of Heinemann created, but not everything about it might be so helpful. There are three points that the Shabbos mode oven accomplished. First of all, there's no 12-hour cutoff that many regular ovens have. That if an oven's on for 12 hours, some new ovens will cut off the gas after that. So Shabbos mode could stay on more than 12 hours. Secondly, Shabbos mode ovens have a way to turn off the display so that even if things are adjusted, there are no displays that are changed on Shabbos. The third point is the issue that we have to discuss. The third point is that it was engineered, Shabbos ovens were engineered such that when I change the heat on the Shabbos, in the Shabbos mode, I'm not actually doing anything. I'm setting up a system, a marker, inside this cycle. And as the cycle goes around, at some point, a few seconds later, it notices that there was a change that was made. When it then, 3 seconds later, picks up that change, then the oven will respond to that change and either make the oven hotter, cooler, whatever, however you adjusted your Shabbos mode. Why is that going to help you? Because it's grama on an issur d'rabbanan. So it's grama on an issur d'rabbanan, l'tzorech mitzvah, to help you cook for Yontif. Grama on an issur d'rabbanan, l'tzorech mitzvah, is going to be mutter. We're only talking about Yontif. Shabbos mode, they call it Shabbos mode. Chas v'shalom, we'll talk about Shabbos. You can't adjust Shabbos. Fires are asur d'oraisa, and grama on an issur d'oraisa will not help you, even if it is l'tzorech mitzvah. Thank you. So the reason why many poskim reject this kula is because you're telling me that it's grama because I did something, and in this same system that I did an action, the system itself, 3 seconds later, picks it up and responds to that action. That's called indirect. Grama doesn't just mean there was a 2 second time delay. Grama means there's koach acher meruv. Grama means there's some external force. I did this, and some external force causes something to happen, and I caused the malacha indirectly. But the way Rav Heinemann engineered the grama in this Shabbos mode kitchen is that in this Shabbos mode oven is that I'm just built into the same system is to recognize that just act 2 seconds later than when I did it. That's not grama, many of the poskim say, because it's built into the same system that the response should respond to what I did. So it's built in that 2 seconds later, whatever you did will turn the oven on, will turn the oven higher. That's not called grama. That's what many poskim take issue with the Shabbos mode, the grama aspect of the Shabbos mode oven. In terms of opening oven doors, on Shabbos, when I open up an oven door, if the fire is not on, when I open up the door, so cold air is going to come in, and my opening up the door will be a grama. There is grama, because cold air is making the oven turn on. So that's going to be not okay on Shabbos, even if it's a psikresha, even if it's a grama, that's going to be usur, because the fire going on Shabbos is an isser mida araisa. But on Yontif, when I open the door, let's say the cold air is going to rush in, so it's a psik resha, the fire will go on. That's okay. It's a psik resha. Lighting a fire on Yontif is only, we mentioned the first point in this shir, is only an issur d'rabbanan. So it's a psik resha on an issur d'rabbanan, l'tzorech Yontif, l'tzorech mitzvah, that will be mutter. Therefore, on Yontif, even if the flame might be off in my oven, when I open it up, it causes the flame to go on, that will be mutter.
That's the grama case as well.
Is it going forth with grama or because of the psik resha on a drabbanan? I don't know if you have to come on to grama then, actually. Sekresh on the Drabbanon Mitzrach Mitzvah itself will be okay. In terms of asking a guy, a new point, in terms of asking a guy to turn your oven on, let's say you're going out for the night meal and you're just going to be home for the day meal, you want to ask a guy to turn on your oven for the day meal. Well, if Molid Eish on Yantav is only Asa Drabbanon, and asking a guy is only Drabbanon, and you want to cook your meal, it's a mitzvah, so it's a shvus to shvus, b'malka mitzvah. So maybe that should be okay. Well, that's only true if it's really a mitzvah. Meaning, if your goal in leaving the flame off and having the guy turn your oven on Yantav is because you want to save money. Saving money is not a mitzvah. It's wonderful to save money, but it's not a mitzvah. If it's because you just don't want to, you know, waste the environment's energy resources, that's not going to be enough of a mitzvah to warrant to be considered a tzach mitzvah. To make a tzach mitzvah means you can't have the flame on now, either because it's not safe, or it's shavuos and 95 degrees outside, you don't want a flame on all yontif in the kitchen. So then you can't have the flame on, so it's a tzach mitzvah to have the oven be turned on. So it really depends on your motivation. If your motivation is that safety or comfort, that's why you're leaving the flame off. So then you can ask a guy to do an issur d'rabbanan of lighting a fire, the tzorach, the mitzvah of your yontif meals. If your motivation is financial or environment, that will not be sufficient to permit the issur, the shvus to shvus, because that will not constitute a makom mitzvah. Next point. Can I lower a fire on yontif? So really, lowering a fire is, if you need to lower it for so that things don't burn, if you just want to lower it, that's not going to be okay. There is a Ramosha that they follow on the Lower East Side that no one really understands, who says you could sort of turn off a pilot or lower a fire on Shabbos, but unless you live on the Lower East Side, no one follows that, because Kibui is also an Issa Daraisa on Yom Tov. If you're going to have something that you don't want to be heated up, so don't turn it off the flame. Don't turn off the flame. Just take it off the stovetop. Take it out of the oven. So why are you turning it off? Let's say you need to turn it lower so that you, it will stay hot, but it won't warm. So here we get into a discussion: is it better to turn on a new flame on your oven, or is it better to lower what you have? This is a machlokas. The Mishnah Berurah says that it's actually better to light a new fire to warm your pot of soup, rather than lower the first fire that was lit. However, the minhag olam is to be make a like Rav Moshe Feinstein in the following point, that if you want to save your food and have it on a lower flame, then you will be able to just lower the fire, and you will not have to light a second fire. Okay, let's finish off this shir regarding Yontif Sheni. Yontif Sheni, the minhag, Yontif Sheni, we know is a minhag. Yizaru b'minhag avaseichem v'yideichem, and therefore, once we're dealing with minhag, the halacha with minhag is that you always follow minhag sheyatza misham. And therefore, if you're coming from a place, if I'm an American and I go visit Eretz Yisrael, Yontif Sheni is a minhag. We follow minhag sheyatza misham. I yatza misham from New York, and the minhag in New York is to keep 2 days, so I should keep 2 days. Comes the Chacham Tzvi and says an incredible chiddush, such a great chiddush that even his own son didn't hold by. The chiddush of the Chacham Tzvi is that we only follow the minhag of makom sheyatza misham in a scenario where it doesn't violate anything where I am. But if I'm going to follow New York minhag in Eretz Yisrael, there it violates where the minhag of the place where I'm going, because it's not just the chumrah to be knowing the minhag that I had. It's going to also be a kula that I'm going to be making brachos. I'm not going to be putting on tefillin. And therefore the Chacham Tzvi says we will not apply the din of that you follow minhag sheyatza misham to the scenario of Yom Tov Sheni. However, most poskim throughout history have not accepted this, like the Yavetz's own son. And the Rebbe Yashiv goes so far as to say that this Chacham Tzvi is not even a sniff lahakel. When you have a tzir of kulas, you can't even use the Chacham Tzvi as a sniff lahakel. Shlomo Zalman didn't take it so far, and says, Malkam Safek, you could use the Chacham Tzvi as a sniff lahakel. Nowadays, due to the fact that it's become a little bit politicized, and due to the fact that it inconveniences relatives, and you can't go on our trips, for some reason, people have been playing game, post-game have gotten a little bit more lenient, that I don't think Rabbi Neuberger is very happy with the fact that that's the case, and most post-game seem to follow Rav Moshe, that a person should follow 2 days, and again, if they want to be machmir for the day and a half, that we, it's not always so easy, it's not any easier, you could think about that. Let's go to the next year. The next year,
what was that one more time that you said if the minhag is it goes to other place and it's usher that what
yeah, meaning when do we say you should follow the minhag of where you came from, where you could you could follow the minhag where you came from and you're not doing anything wrong. But okay, in Yantav Sheni you're gonna end up doing things wrong by following that. By being machmir for a second day of Yantav, you're also being Mekel. I don't know, perhaps Bal Tosef, but certainly Bracha Levatalos. Okay, next year we'll talk about Rabbi Becher's year. The halacha is a piruv, a little bit lighter. We talked about a lot of hard things, and I'll talk about something lighter, and then we'll go back to something more halacha. So let's just list off a long list of sources that show from the Torah that there is a mitzvah for kiruv rechokim, not just rechokim, ourselves also. First of all, Mitzvah d'oraisa of Ahavas Hashem. Zifri explains that that means you have to be Ahaveu Ahabrios. Mitzvah d'oraisa of Tochacha. Tochacha, the Rambam writes, is not only B'shas Maisa, but even if somebody's B'derech Lo Tova, even if they're on the wrong path in life, so it's not just I see you're about to flick on a light, I say don't flick on the light on Shabbos, I see you're going the wrong school, the wrong mahalach, the wrong way of life, that's also, the Rambam says, a mitzvah of tochacha. Of course, there are limitations, because the pasuk says, hachayav tochiach es amisecha, he has to be amisecha, and therefore if somebody is not amisecha but Torah mitzvah, so that might question whether tochacha should apply. There are tirutzim for that. Third source could be hashavas aveda, because we know the Gemara in Bava Kama applies hashavas aveda. Kalvachomer hashavas gufo. Well, if it's hashavas gufo to prevent somebody from hurting their bodies, so too, there should be no less be able to apply the kalvachomer hashavas aveda for money. Certainly, hashavas aveda for their nefesh to return, let them be shomrei mitzvahs. Another pasuk, lo samala damriacha. If he's drowning, not just in the oceans of water, but oceans of ignorance, chait, there too will have lo samod. Another source, the mitzvah of Chesed. Another source, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, where the Rambam writes that in terms of Talmud Torah, that which the Torah says you have to teach your children, that just means your children have kedima. It doesn't mean that you only have a mitzvah of teaching Torah to your children. You have a mitzvah to teach Torah to everybody, to your Talmidim. Children, you have kedima. Your grandchildren have kedima. But the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is to everybody as well, as the Gemara in Bava Basra says, that they established Mlamdei Tinokos in each city. Nowadays, Mlamdei Tinokos aren't just for 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds, they're also for 30, 40, 50, and 60-year-olds, who their Jewish knowledge is no greater than those children. Another source, V'hatu Recha Kamocha, the Ramban says that I should want whatever I want for myself, I should want for others. The Ramban says that's not just in terms of financial wealth, but also in terms of knowledge, chachma, I should also want for my friend as much as I want it for myself. Another source, the Isser of the Arur, Asher lo yakim esefer haTorah hazos, Rabbeinu Yonah understands that to mean that you have to make sure that everybody around you also is upholding, again, it's not just so you to keep Torah, but you have to uphold other people learning Torah. Another source is the mitzvah of Arvus, chashlu ish bavon achiv, which the Rishonim say, Arvus means that I did not fulfill my mitzvah, let's say, of Kiddush or Tekiyas Shofar, until every single Jew has fulfilled their mitzvahs. So therefore, there's a chisaron in my kiyum ha-mitzvah, not just of Talmud Torah, but all my kiyum ha-mitzvahs, if there are other Jews who are not yet fulfilling those mitzvahs. Another pasuk, uvi'arta harami kibecha. And finally, the mitzvah, d'oraisa, of Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem, the Rambam writes, is to let people know about Hashem and His mitzvos. Now, those are the sources. The next point is, what's the status of a non-religious person, of a non-observant person? So, even though the Gemara sounds, the Gemara in Avin writes, in a Mechal Shas before Hesia, is Dino, Kovid Avodah Zara, and all that there is to that, there are a number of mitigating factors that not every Mechal Shabbos is Dino Ka'akam. First of all, the Gemara in Erevim writes that he's Dino Ka'akam only if he's willing to be Chote Mechal Shabbos in front of an Adam Gadol. Others say that Farhesia is only in front of 10 Shomri Mitzvah. So if you have a guy who lives in a neighborhood where there are no Jewish people, and certainly not 10 Shomri Mitzvah, so a guy who lives in a small town in the middle of Middle America, then he can't be Mechal Shabbos for Farhesia, because that town doesn't have a Farhesia. Another mitigating factor is the Chazon Ish, who learns from the Gemara in terms of the definition of Mezid and Shogig, that the only time something is considered a Mezid is if you know that it was Onish Karis. But if you don't know that it's Onish Karis, which most non-observant people don't know that things are Chayav Karis or not Chayav Karis, that will make the person not even considered a Mezid. He's only a Shogig in his Chil Shabbos. Thirdly, the Tosfos in Chulin says that only a person who is Ragil to be Mechal Shabbos before Hesia will make them a Mumar, will make them a Dino Ka'akum, even though the Shach is Machmir if he does it once. But there is this Shita of Tosfos that only if a person is a Ragil. Accordingly, based on all these different Kulas, we have the right to assume that everybody Bizman Azeh is a non-observant person, practically, is a Tinok Shanishba. And other than the leaders who might be Mumrim, but all the, you know, even the leaders now don't know what the leaders of the last generation knew. And most people you'll encounter are going to be Tinokos Shanishbu. And accordingly, Rav David Tzvi Hafman says you therefore can be Mitzarei from Mechal Shabbos to a Minyan. And similarly, we had this in our shul. There used to be a fellow who came to shul. I don't know if you were in Shenk when he used to come a year or two ago. He used to come a little bit of an interesting fellow. He used to come into shul with his earphones on until somebody pointed out to him that he probably shouldn't wear his earphones into shul Shabbos morning. But he's a very big lover of shul, and he would come to shul, and he very much wanted an aliyah. So he kept on telling me what his Hebrew name is, and reminding me that, you know, he got an aliyah when he was bar mitzvah, and he loves getting aliyahs. So we tried to get away with it with a galila, until he bugged me, and then Rabbi Shechter said we could give him an aliyah, because if he wants an aliyah, that shows he believes in the aliyah. If you believe in it, therefore his bracha will not be a bracha vatal. He believes that Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish people, and that's why he wants the Aliyah so badly. So if he believes in it, the bracha is not a bracha vatal. If, however, and this we also had a shayla in, if you do a Siddur Kedusha, that you want to give a bracha, one of the Sheva brachas, to one of the uncles, he can't be an aid. He's not kosher for an aid. He doesn't believe in anything. Well, he can't say the bracha either, because he doesn't believe that there is a Hashem who created the world. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. If he doesn't believe that there's a Hashem who's a Melech HaOlam, then his bracha is a bracha levatala. If, however, he believes that there's a Hashem who created the world and created Adam and Chav and whatever else and marriage, he just doesn't actually do mitzvahs, then his bracha is a good bracha. He could recite Shabbat brachas. So it really depends on the level of belief. Next topic. I didn't see any chiluk, but I don't know the answer. Good question. Next topic we're going to talk about is two interrelated things. That's once they give lifnei iver, with two aspects. One of feeding them, feeding people who are not shomrei mitzvos, who will not make brachas or do netilas yadayim. And the second aspect of lifnei iver is inviting people to come for Shabbos if they might drive. So the Gemara in Chulin says, lo yitein prusa elim yodea sheyitol yadav. Rabbeinu Yonah extends this did of netilas yadayim to also mean that you cannot give food if the person will not make a bracha, and this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. There is a kula. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that if your intention is for tzedakah, then you're allowed to give it even though they will not make a bracha. And let's assume he doesn't mean tzedakah specifically, he means letzorach mitzvah. So accordingly, if your intention is for kiruv purposes, then it might be permitted. It's a little bit complicated. We're not going to get to the details. How we take that kula. There's another kula that Itziv suggests that if I give a person food to eat and I walk away and I don't actually see them eating it, it's very possible, as far-fetched as it sounds, that they might go and ask, you know, some other religious personality, oh, what bracha do you make on this? How do I do it in Tehillas Yadayim? So you didn't actually see anything happening. That wouldn't be lifnei iver if you walked away before he actually ate the food. The Netziv and the Meshev Davar. The Chazon Ish puts a little twist on things and points out, just like you're allowed to give demai to aniyim, why are you allowed to give demai to aniyim? The Chazon Ish says, because if you don't give him the food, he'll violate lo sisna sachticha bilvavacha. So accordingly, the Chazon Ish says, if you don't give a person food, you'll therefore distance him from Yiddishkeit, then you will be allowed to give the person food to eat. Rav Scheinberg is the obvious kula, that if you feed him lunch and he's not going to have to go to the McDonald's for lunch, then you're saving him from violating Yisurim. That doesn't always apply. Sometimes it's like a shear at, you know, 8 o'clock at night, everyone just finished dinner. So if you're going to give out cookies and they're not going to make a bracha, well, then they wouldn't have eaten anything at 8 o'clock anyway. They just finished dinner. So that applies sometimes, not always. Now, the second half of the Shaila of Lifnei Iver, in terms of inviting people for Shabbos guests, Rav Moshe does not have an explicit tshuva about inviting people for Shabbos, but he has two tshuvas regarding having minyanim for non-religious people to attend. Specifically, he's talking about children. Having a beginner's minyan for kids and asking them to, they're going to be driven to shul. And Rav Moshe says, in very strong words, and he does not mince words there, that not only are you violating lifnei iver, but you're actually a mesis or mediach, you're telling them to be mechalel Shabbos to come to shul for your beginner's minyan. And it's meis u'mediach, and it's encouraging, you want to teach them the chashivas of tefillah, so you tell them to Michal Shabbos to do that. Who says that that's the way you educate? So Rav Moshe Feinstein, if we would apply that svara to inviting people for Shabbos lunch, it would probably be the same answer, which is a no. You cannot invite somebody for a Shabbos meal if they will drive. But we have other ways to look at the Shaila. Rav Moshe Sternbach has a very big kula, a very big chiddush, which is a kula. He says, just like by Chovel, the pasuk says, ki notzo anashim yachta, if they're fighting, and if the Gemara says it's only derech nitzayon, only if it's a way of fighting that Chovel is going to be an issa d'oraisa. But if you're a rope, if you want to do surgery on a, if you're a brain surgeon, you want to do surgery on a fellow Jew, no one's going to say that's Chovel b'chaveru, because it's not derech nitzayon, it's not fighting. So too suggests Rav Moshe Sternbach, we could say that lifnei iver is when you want to put a mikshol in front of somebody, if your motivation is to mess him up. But if your motivation is adraba, to inspire him, to raise that person, that will not be lifnei iver. It's a fabulous understanding of lifnei iver. And therefore, it would be mutter, it's not a violation of lifnei iver, because your goal is not to be machshel, adraba, your goal is to elevate. But Rav Moshe Sternbach says there are a few conditions. You have to make clear that the Jewish tradition is that we don't drive on Shabbos. You also have to be concerned with Chilul Hashem, that he shouldn't park in front of your house or in your driveway. And third of all, the motivation may only be for the purpose of doing Kiruv, the Tzorach Mitzvah, but not if your motivation is just a social reason, you want to have your cousin over for the Bar Mitzvah, because how can you not invite your cousin to the Bar Mitzvah? Not because you want to make him closer and experience a beautiful Shabbos meal, you just have to invite him because it's your son's bar mitzvah. That's a social reason. That would not have the heter. I think the most accepted psak of David Cohn, Rabbi Shechter has told me this, is that if you, based on a mission Shavuos that says that lifnei iver is only if you sell something that could only lifnei iver by during Shemitah, if you sell items that can be used, that will be used definitely for Malachas HaAsuras and Shemitah, that's lifnei iver. But the Mishnah says in Shavuos that if you sell an item like a scythe, you know, that is harvesting knives, that could either be used Litzarach Iser or Litzarach Heter, then it's not lifnei iver. So according to that logic, Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests, if I invite you to come for Shabbos and to stay over, and you could either choose to do whatever you want, you could either stay over and not violate Shabbos, or you choose to drive, therefore it's not going to be usher for me to extend that invitation where I gave you a heter option and an isra option. The non-observant person chose the isra option. That's his problem. That's not my problem. That's not lifnei iver. Just like I could sell an item, like a scythe, on Shemitah, if he chooses to use it for isra, that's his problem. That wasn't lifnei iver on my part. That is the end. Oh, one last cute point is, how could a person ever... Bruria told her husband, Rav Meir, right? Tim and Meir. Don't daven that the Rishonim should die. Shelo yitama chotim in haaretz, elecha tamim in haaretz. You should daven that they should do tshuva. The Maharsha asks, how could you ever daven that somebody does tshuva? After all, hakol bidei shamayim, and therefore, chutz miyos shamayim, so this is your shamayim, you can't ask Hashem to get involved. So a number of answers. The Moshe said that you should daven that that person should meet an inspiring individual. I should daven that this person should, you know, go on a Shabbaton, they'll be turned on, they'll meet somebody who will inspire them, they'll end up being in a circumstance where they will, you know, be inspired. The Chazon Ish has a beautiful pshat. He says that all of Klal Yisrael is guf echad. So you're a guf echad with that same non-observant person. So when you're davening for that non-observing person to do tshuva, what you're really doing is you and that non-observant person are the same person. And therefore it is your free will to daven for that person, bichlal. It's as though you're davening for yourself, ki'ilu, when you're davening for the other person. And therefore, it will be, it's your own free will to daven, it's not going to be a problem of hakol bidei shamayim. That's the end of Kiruv. Next year, the last point was the Chazon Ish. Next year, moving right along, is fasting for Yom Kippur from Rabbi Neuberger. There's a well-known, everybody used to know in the olden days when Diane Fisher was alive, if there was ever a woman who wanted a kula, they would go to Diane Fisher. The joke, Rabbi Neuberger didn't say this joke, but the joke was
that if a woman's pregnant, she doesn't have to fast. If a woman is not pregnant, then she must be sick, so she doesn't have to fast. That was the joke that people said about Diane Fisher's kula.
So Diane Fisher came out with a kula that said that you don't have to fast, that ubaros, even though the Shulchan Aruch says clearly that you have to fast on Yom Kippur, Diane Fisher said that nowadays it's Chalish Sadoros and people, there are many mapilos, so even pregnant women do not have to fast, rather they should eat Prachas Mikashir. One thing that's very important, I realize a lot of people are not aware of, as Rabbanim and Mechanchim, you should make clear, that eating on Yom Kippur, even Prachas Mikashir, is Aser Mida Araisa. And the only time you're ever allowed to eat, even Pachas Mikashir, on Yom Kippur, is in a case of Pikuach Nefesh. It's obvious, but please make sure that people realize it, because I found out that a lot of people do not know that. A lot of people think that Pachas Mikashir is only Asa Darabara. It's Asa Daraisa, only permitted the Tzarech Pikuach Nefesh, but when a person needs to eat, then of course, Machin HaKala Kal Tchila, and we do Shiurim. Anyway, that was a sidebar. Diane Fisher said that pregnant women should eat Pachas Mikashir on Yom Kippur. And the poskim have rejected Diane Fisher in three ways. First of all, could you really argue that Nechleshu Adoros? We would argue that perhaps the women nowadays are much better health-wise, nutrition-wise, than women in pregnancy, than when they were, when people didn't have fruits for 8 months a year. So how could you say that we're weaker, that we probably are much better nutrition-wise? Secondly, Rabbi Bleich did some research and found out from all the Ramadan and Yom Kippur research in Israel and Arab countries that does fasting actually cause women to give birth? Well, statistically, there's not a significant change in fasting causing women to give birth before full term. There might be some tiny increase in terms of people who are, you know, in the 39th week when they're supposed to give birth anyway, so fasting might bring it on a few hours earlier, but in terms of, there's nothing wrong with that. In terms of sakana, the research does not indicate that there is risk. And thirdly, when Rav Fisher said, oh, there were people who, you know, women who were mapilos because of fasting, well, yeah, that's because if he looks at everybody, there were some women who were mapilos and they shouldn't have fasted in the first place. They were probably in that category of people who should not be fasting. But that doesn't give you a right to say that therefore all pregnant women should therefore be, that all pregnant women should therefore not have to fast. And even if you do say that that was actually all one, all those things I just said are actually rejections in terms of the data doesn't indicate that it's warranted to, that there's Chalish Tadaris now. A second rejection of Diane Fisher is that what kind of numbers are you working with? It is true that over a course of 40 years, being a dayan in Yerushalayim, getting this shaila, as I told you, all the women came to him, over the thousands of shailas that you have, there were a handful of mapilos, so that one and who knows how many thousand, that might not be statistical enough evidence to mean, even if we say that a suffix of a suffix of a suffix, that still might not be considered a suffix pikuach nefesh. And thirdly, this halacha of the Shulchan Aruch, it's a Mefurisha Mishnah, it's a Mefurisha Shulchan Aruch, and to say that Nishtanu HaTvayim on a halacha that was paskened straight through from the Mishnah to the Shulchan Aruch and on, and to say that all of a sudden Nishtanu HaTvayim, that's a little bit not so easy, and therefore the contemporary poskim do not accept Dayan Fisher's Kula, and therefore Rabbi Neuberger's position, certainly as many others, is that pregnant women should fast on Yom Kippur, as long as they should fast on Yom Kippur, and they should not eat Parchas Mikashir. Let's go to the next point, and that is, when is it that... That there would be mapilos, whatever...
Did we give a specific detail, like how many months in?
So let's talk about now, when is it that a pregnant woman is, yes, considered to be in danger, and therefore she should eat? Let's go through a bunch of symptoms or situations where you as a Rav should tell a woman who calls you, you know, you, even though a regular pregnant woman should not eat, you, because of your condition, your circumstance, I want you, yes, to eat. It's usually Pachas Mikashir. So first of all, if there were two undiagnosed miscarriages, or if there were a miscarriage that was potentially related to dehydration, that person should, of course, drink. Second, if a woman is at risk for preterm delivery, so that changes with each delivery, that should be, you know, if a woman might, you know, if she already delivered very early twice, she got better at whatever it is, so such a woman also... you don't want to have every preterm delivery is dangerous. If the baby's coming out 3-4 weeks early, it depends on the week. So talk to the doctors and talk to her. Next case, let's say a woman's in the 7th, 8th month and she has preterm labor pains, and there's a concern that the lack of fluid might cause danger. That also could be something to think about. A woman who vomits on Yom Kippur, a woman comes to shul, pregnant woman, and she vomited. Once or twice, that's not a risk of dehydration. But once a woman vomits 3 times on Yom Kippur, this Yom Kippur, meaning today, the husband comes running to you at mincha, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, my wife just vomited 3 times, you tell her, okay, risk of dehydration, go drink. Or if on Yom Kippur, the woman is demonstrating signs of dehydration. Now keep in mind, signs of dehydration is a potentially pikuach nefesh, not just for pregnant women. It's just more accentuated for pregnant women because it could also cause the baby harm, and there's also she might be drained from the liquids because it goes to the baby. But dehydration is a pikuach nefesh for anybody. So signs of dehydration are contractions, an unusually bad headache, heart palpitations, faintness, even when a person's sitting down or lying down, they still feel faint or dizzy. There's no fetal movement. So in those cases, then, of course, a person should drink. Now, if a woman is already in her 9th month, and on Yom Kippur, she's in her 9th month, and she gets labor pains, so then there's a machlokas. Diane Fisher, it's funny, Diane Fisher, who usually says she shouldn't be fasting in the first place, here he has a chavra. Diane Fisher says, well, once she's in her 9th month, why should she eat if she goes into labor? So she'll give birth. What's wrong with giving birth in the 9th month? Nothing wrong with that. What's the point of eating? So she won't give birth, she can give birth. Rav Nevinsel has an interesting svar that when a woman gives birth and she has to push the baby out, she needs a lot of strength and she needs a lot of energy, and therefore she needs to drink to have the strength to be able to give birth. So we're not worried that it's going to cause her to give birth, but it's as she's going to be giving birth, she has to have the strength in her to give the birth. So Rabbi Neuberger sort of made a pshara that if it's, you know, she just had a Sudas Mafsekas 3 hours earlier, she's plenty of energy and plenty of liquid to give birth. If it's, you know, 22 hours later, then we're worried that she might need the energy, then maybe he'd be Mako. Now, in terms of educating women, pregnant women specifically, that when they're pregnant, their avodas Hashem is not to go to shul and see how they could do until they have to drink. No. Their avodas Hashem is to stay home and to not need to put themselves in a situation that they should chas v'shalom need to eat or drink. And that's a very important role that the rabbi, as a not as a halachic person, but as a, you know, a pastor, has to make sure that he could make this convincing argument with women do not like to hear. In terms of parchas mikashir, whenever you're drinking, you might as well drink juice instead of water, because juice has sugar, so if sugar will help, so sugar, I think grape juice has even more than orange juice. So the shear would be 1 ounce in 9 minutes, which ends up being about 6 ounces an hour. If that's not enough, then you could be somich on more lenient shitas of what Kedei Achilas Pras is, which would be 7 minutes, 6 minutes, 5 minutes, or even 4 minutes. And of course, if the need is that she has to drink a lot at once, and that's medically necessary, then do whatever you have to do, of course. Sorry? I mean, it's subjected to the person, but the person use an ounce. An ounce would be safe. 9, 7, 6, 5, 4. If you write 8 on the test, then you're you're in big trouble. Okay, Rabbi Neuberger holds that it's better if you definitely know that you're going to have to drink a lot later. If I definitely know that I'm going to have 3 cups of water at 4 in the afternoon. If that's the case, then it's better to drink pachas mikashir earlier in the day, so I won't have to come to that situation. 1 point. Next point. If I may have to drink a lot later, but I don't necessarily have to drink a lot later, we'll see. Then it's better to try to fast now. And if later I end up that I do have to drink a lot, okay, so later, I'm in a pikuach nefesh situation, I'll do it. But right now, I might be able to fast the whole day, so keep on fasting. Rav Zalman points out that it's better every time, you know, even if you should avoid having to do pachas mikashir, each time that you can avoid pachas mikashir, avoid it. If you need to, then do it, but each time is significant. So just to reiterate, if the doctor says she could fast, but if she dehydrates, she's going to have to drink, you know, 4 cups of water, it's better to try to fast. And okay, if she will dehydrate, then let her drink the 4 cups of water. One other case that she would be allowed to drink, to the list that we had before, is if it's the first few weeks, the early stages of pregnancy, then if she's staining, that's a big risk that she might lose the fetus, and therefore she could drink even in those early stages of pregnancy. Of course, anybody, even a person who's not pregnant, if they feel faint or dizzy, even after they sit down, that could be a concern of dehydration, and it would be pikuach nefesh for anybody, so anybody would be able to drink shiurim if they had that concern for dehydration. That's that shiur. Next shiur, we'll talk about hashkaf or halacha. Okay, so we'll talk about women's roles. It's halacha also. Women's roles. So are women allowed to learn Torah? The Gemara seems to say no. Ram seems to say no. Kolam lamed bito Torah kilam lamed tiflis is paskin. However, one of the reasons that perhaps things are different now, or perhaps there is that which women should be learning, the Prisha points out that if there is an individual woman who, or an individual group of women who demonstrate a thirst for learning, and they'll be responsible in their learning, so then it is okay. Secondly, the Rama says that a woman, of course, has to learn the halachas, the areas of halachas that apply to them. Between you and me, that's most of Shulchan Aruch. It's all of Yeridaya. It's most of Choshen Mishpat. It's a bunch of Eben HaEzer and Aruch Chaim, certainly. So there's a lot to learn. Anyway, of course, we were all familiar in our yeshiva that Rav Soloveitchik felt that as women are more sophisticated in their secular culture, if their Torah encounters are so watered down, diluted, and then they're studying, you know, astrophysics at a PhD program in, you know, at Ivy League universities, their whole Chashivas HaTorah is going to be warped, and therefore it's absolutely necessary in our day and age for women to be at least as educated in Torah and in the sophisticated level of way of learning Torah as in their secular pursuits. The Igros Moshe has a little bit confusing about how he presents it, but he says as long as if the motivation is to promote Kedusha, not to promote feminism, then it will be women. Of course, their learning they are on the same level of Kedusha as men, and as indicated in Pesukim, and therefore they would be allowed to learn. Now let's talk about women in leadership positions. There are four, before we get into the details, there are four issues that have to be addressed whenever we talk about a woman being in a certain position of authority. The first one is the halacha of esrara, authority. There's the issue of tznius, which is not just a hashkafic issue, but it's a halacha of the din of Moavi v'lo Moavis. Amoni v'lo Amonis is based on the assumption that women are tznuim and therefore wouldn't go out and weren't expected to go out and give drink to even Benesor, or certainly even Benos Yisrael. So we paskin halachas deraisa based on the tznius expectations of women. Of course, men also have to be tznuim in their own way. Third point is you have to deal with the Mesorah issue. And fourthly, you have to deal with halachic issues. For example, we could have all the greatest, most wonderful reasons for women to be dayanim and edim, but the halacha is that they can't be. So let's talk about srara first of all. Pasuk says, Som tasim alecha melech. And the Sifri says, melech v'lo malka. That means a malka cannot have the din of, there's no din of a malka. You can't have in the highest position of authority. The problem is that the Rambam adds a few words, and he says, so too, kol mesima b'Yisrael. Not just melech v'lo malka, not just in terms of malchus, but even in terms of all positions of authority, there will be a problem for women to assume. Now, the Igros Moshe, when he's talking about a woman being a mashkicha, says that mi'ikar ha'din, most Rishonim don't learn like the Rambam, and don't extend this isra of srara to women to other areas. And therefore, b'shas hadcha gadol, you could be somech on the other shitas to allow, again, b'shas hadcha gadol, whatever his situation was, a woman who used to didn't have any money, and her husband used to be the mashkiach, and he died, and then we would be able to rely on the other Rishonim who don't hold that there's an isra of srara by women. And also, Ramosha adds that since we want to at least, we are, in general, the minhag is to, yes, be machmir for the Rambam at least, even if there are many shittas that make her, then you could not go like the Rambam, but they should, if a woman would work at least in that situation under Rav HaMachshir, even though she would be the mashkicha, it would be a Rav HaMachshir, so still she's not making the decisions or the final decisions, that wouldn't be srara because she doesn't have the final say or the final official say, so that would fit even perhaps according to the Rambam, who holds as an isisra in this case, maybe having a Rav HaMachshir would make it not even srara.
If she's representing a vaj, is that the same as having a separate Rav HaMachshir?
I think that would be the case. Because the vad is the one who makes the decisions, and she has to report to the vad.
Right.
Obviously, there was a lot of back and forth in terms of Rav Moshe's kula. There are those who didn't like it because it's a very slippery slope, but Rav Moshe says, no, this is the halacha, that, of course, people who deal with this halacha will always consult the Gedolei Torah in their time to see how the application should be in specific applications of srara. But Mikra Din, we don't have to be choshish for the Rambam, Mikra Adim, Mishas Etcha Kodol. Rav Soloveitchik was Mechadesh, another concern besides the issue of Sarah, and that's an issue of Minui, that even if there's no authority in the position, but if it's an official appointed position, even though it's not an authority, but it's an appointed position, that itself would be a problem. And that's how we explain that even though the Gemara says Nashim Shochtos, the minhag of the Ramah is that women cannot be Shochtim. So Rav Soloveitchik explained that in the olden days, people did Shechita in their backyards, so there was no appointment. There's definitely no Srara. But at least in terms of being an appointment, a Minoi, well, you did your own Shechita in your backyard. So Nashim are Ksheros. But nowadays, in the time of the Ramah, in the community of the Ramah, that a Shochet is an appointed position, again, not authority, but nevertheless appointed position, so it is a problem of Minoi, and that's why Rav Soloveitchik prevented held that a woman can't be a president of a shul, not just because of a Sraro authority issue, but because it's an appointment, and that itself would be a problem.
Oh, where does the Rav get the meaning?
I think he makes it up based on the why the Rama seems to be going against the Gemara. I don't know if he has other sources, but it's. I don't think there's a sugya called sugya of minoy.
If you were able to say there's Rama had a different reason.
I don't know. I don't know. I have to ask somebody. In terms of women being rabbis, so Rabbi Reis was very clear, not just from an emotional and Masora perspective, but even in terms of halacha, because what's the whole tachlis of smicha? The Rambam says that smicha l'doros does not mean putting your hand, none of you are going to get a hand on your head when you get smicha, rather you're going to be called a rabbi and given a piece of paper that says you now have rishus to paskin this and this and this, and among them, lodon dine knossos. So in other words, the Rambam is saying that smicha is smicha if you have the opportunity for dayanas. We know clearly that the halacha is, and this is a non-negotiable halacha, that women are not ksherim to be dayanim. So therefore, from an absolute halachic perspective, from an absolutely halachic perspective, from a perspective that is absolutely halachic, I should say, women are not ksherim ladan, and therefore smicha will be off limits to women, because smicha is to be roi ladan. That's aside from any other tznius issues, mesora issues, srara issues, mini issues. In terms of a ger, will you say also that a ger is not roi ladun, and therefore they also can't be a rabbi or shul? Well, here, a ger is kashu ladun as chaveru hager, and in those situations, a ger would be kashu ladun, therefore a ger could be a rabbi. In terms of a woman being a paskening halachas or being a etzet, there we get into the sugya of devora, where Tosis says that women, that Dvora taught, so you see at least that women can teach, and not only that, but the Sefer HaChinuch, when he talks about the Isser Shtuya Yayin, when you paskin, it says that the Isser Shtuya Yayin will, yes, apply to women, because a woman might, is Kshera Lahara. So, according to those, that perspective, it seems that a woman might be able to teach, perhaps even paskin. The issue might be that if she's appointed to a position of Hora, that might be an issue of Minui, that might also be an issue of Srara. Now, Tosis, when he talks about Devora, Tosis presents it. There are different ways that Tosis says it. One of the ways that Tosis says it, which is the way, I think that makes it into a Shulchan Aruch. I don't remember. But Tosis does, among the other presentations, say that Devora told the men how Sheyodunu. Meaning, who is paskening? She was the one behind the scenes who told them all the information, what they need to do and what they should do. But the one who were issuing the psak were the men themselves, and therefore, according to that part of Tosa, according to that answer in Tosa, it could be that if a woman would, a yoetzet, would not be, would be consulting with Rav Ha'ir, she's just teaching it, but in terms of the actual psak, it's not her paskening, the Rav is paskening, that might take away some of the meaning issues and take away some of the other issues. But again, the bottom line when we talk about this issue is, are you trying to enhance halacha or are you trying to undermine halacha? And if the goal is to undermine halacha, don't go there. Also important to keep in mind that when we say that giving aliyahs to women is aser, and the Gemara says because of kavod hatzibur. So could a congregation get up and say, oh, but we're mochel, our kavod? Or could they say that for us it is kavod to have women getting aliyahs? The Bach there says that kavod hatzibur is not something that's subjective to this tzibur or that tzibur. Kavod hatzibur is an objective halacha, that there's a kavod hatzibur that's not appropriate for a woman to be getting aliyahs, and presumably that should also apply to something like Kabbalah Shabbos, that it would not be the Kavod HaTzibur for them to lead. Let's talk about, could a woman say Kaddish? Here we have a very important machlokas, because a lot of times this is a very emotional issue, as you could well imagine. If there are no brothers, no sons, and it's just an only daughter, and you're going to tell her she can't say Kaddish, could she, where? So the Chavetz Yair says that it is not, even though there probably would be a tikkun to the neshama, and there might not be an answer in terms of problem in terms of answering Amenya, Amenya Hishm Rabba, but there's a different concern. Shem, she's a yachlish koach haminhagim, and especially something that's bepirsum and a minion, you should not do. So Chavis Yair is machmir, that a woman should not say Kaddish. Rav Henkin, however, argued, and it said if they're tsnuim and tahorim, they have all the right intentions, you have to make sure that that's the case, and it's in front of women, it's just on the same time when men are saying Kaddish, she's saying it in front of the women. Efshar she'ein v'zek peida, but of course, as long as it's all doing, being done in the right way, with the right intentions. Efshar she'ein v'zek peida. Many people were not happy with Rav Henkin's kula, and they felt that this is going to be, and you know, lead us on a slippery slope, that's going to start with this, and it's going to the next thing, and the next thing, as I think history has showed itself. But on the other hand, the Varen Soloveitchik said the opposite. If Medina, it is mutter for women to say Kaddish, and we're going to stop them from doing that, then it's just going to be fuel in the fire for our enemies, who are saying that even that which is mutter, you see that the Orthodox are just trying to oppress women, because it's mutter, they still say you can't. So Rav Aaron felt that if it is mutter, so let them do that which is mutter. I remember speaking to Rav Schachter about this, and I remember he had an issue that it turned as far as Varim Shabikdusha, if you're not in the same, did you ever go to shul for Mincha on Shabbos afternoon or Maariv Friday night, and all the men are davening in the women's section? So Rav Schachter, when I was talking about this question, Rav Schachter had said to me that, you know, the other side of the Mechitza is a different Rishus, so there's no minion there. So how could they say, they can't say Kaddish in the other side of the Mechitza, because there's no minion there. So they'd have to come to shul. You're going to say she could come to shul and say Kaddish. So Sof Tavar asked Rav Schachter if it is Halacha Maisa. That's in terms of women saying Kaddish. In terms of Bas Mitzvah parties. Ask him, I'm not sure. It was a long time ago, I don't remember the details.
I mean, they talk about this in the high school, it really depends on the construction of the women's side of the mechitza. If it's like a balcony inside the wall.
Right. We have a balcony in our shul, so maybe he's talking to me about our balcony. That's certainly a different rishus. So.
I think it's the other way around. It's a balcony in one room.
That would be considered one room? Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay. Could be. Okay, let's just finish off this shiur about women in terms of the appropriateness of bat mitzvah celebrations. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, in his very wonderful way, that we're already mitzatar about the nature of our bar mitzvah parties, so why should we start all these gala celebrations for things that there's not even, you know, a minuk to have? However, so Rav Moshe Feinstein does not look favorably upon bat mitzvah celebrations. The Sri Deish, however, says that for the purpose of inspiring a young woman and to be mechanichar, so then it would be okay, as long as it's, you know, you don't break with the Mesorah and the Inyan of Tzniyah, so then it is okay to have, as long as it's not in a shul. But just keep in mind that if you have a bas mitzvah that is not exactly inspiring women to be more medaktik b'halach, and you could all imagine such bat mitzvah parties, then there's nothing to start of. The whole goal was that it is to inspire her. Okay, that's a sidebar. Rav Avadia says, it's no problem, we've been doing this, the Ben Ish Chai made bat mitzvah parties, and it's appropriate to say Rosh Tzmiros, or Tishpachos, and Devei Torah, and I believe he holds that it would be a Sudas mitzvah. Okay, those are the different ways to look at it. Of course, with all these issues, all these women's issues are very significant, and they should all be discussed with Mori Hora, with the Gedolei Hador, because they are very significant issues that don't just impact your little shul or your little community in whatever corner of America you'll find yourselves, but they have very far-reaching impacts in terms of the Mesorah of Klal Yisrael. So keep that in mind. Should we talk about mikvahs or caring for children on Shabbos? Okay, caring for children on Shabbos. Let's do it. Okay, so let's talk about just a moment about nursing. Nursing is mutter. However, milking a cow, lahavdil, is also midaraisa. Pumping, there are two kinds of pumps. There are manual pumps that could be attached to the breast, or there are electric pumps. That will be disha midaraisa. That will be also midaraisa. The problem is that, fine, we could give the baby formula, but what about the mother who at some point it's going to be very uncomfortable if the milk is not released, if the baby's not nursing, but the milk still has to come out. So there, to alleviate the mother's pain, if we figure out a way to knock out the Isser Disha of milking to an Isser Drabanan, so if it's an Isser Drabanan, that's B'makom Tzar, we could figure out a way to be Mekel, and therefore, the way we could do that, by knocking out the Disha to Drabanan, is by saying that the milk could be thrown out. If the milk goes li'ibud, then it will be a melacha she'ena tzrich l'gufa, because you're not trying to get the milk. So it's only melacha she'ena tzrich l'gufa, which most people, besides the Rambam at least, let's assume is only an Isser Drabanan, and Isser Drabanan will be mutter b'makom tzar. The question is, to make it go ibud, does it have to go straight into, you know, you go straight into the pile of detergent, or you could just get it into a little canister that's on the bottle of the pumps and then spill it into the sink or the toilet? Okay, that's a discussion. So therefore, halacha l'maaseh, if a woman is in a lot of pain, they should, so the manual pumps that people use are asur d'oraisa. Again, if they put some detergent on the bottom, maybe that could be okay. But even better, if you have an electric pump that's set up before Shabbos, that just the body has to go against the pump, and then the pump does the rest of the work. So if you have a goy turn it on, or a Shabbos clock turn it on, that would be great. And if you don't have a goy or a Shabbos clock, perhaps you could even turn the electric pump on, kila achar yad, which would perhaps be derabbanan, but malkam tzara, that might also be okay. But keep in mind, even in that case, the milk will have to be thrown out, discarded. Next point in caring for children is making oatmeal or mush or farina for a little baby. The problem is one of the Isser D'oraisa of Lisha. Whenever you mix flour with water, you make a mush that's called Lisha. And the Tanaim say that have a machlok is when the moment of Lisha is. Is the moment of Lisha when you put the water in, or when you are kneading it and it becomes that mush that you're trying to get? And the Gemara says that if you make a shinui, kil'acha yad, bish'as lisha, whatever moment is the lisha moment, that will actually become mutter. Other places, we don't, shinui kil'acha yad, don't make things mutter. By lisha, a shinui kil'acha yad makes this Isser D'oraisa actually mutter. But when is that moment? So if you hold that the moment of lisha is the nesinas hamayim, so if you do a shinui in the nesinas hamayim, you'll be okay. If you hold that the moment of Lisha is the Shas Gibel, when you're actually doing the kneading, so that if you knead with a K, in with a Shinui, then it will be okay. Which one is it? We don't know. We don't know. It's a big machlokas whether the Iker moment of Lisha is the Nesinas Hamayim or the Shas Gibel, and therefore we're going to be machmer all around. We're going to pour the water in the not the right, you know, pour the water in a way that's not the order that we usually do, or not the order that the box says. I don't know where the box should become the postake, but whatever order you normally do, you reverse the order. That would be a shuni b'shas nesinas mayim. However you normally mix, you'll mix in a different way. You'll mix, instead of mixing around, you do shesi of erev in a crisscross. You'll do the mixing perhaps with your finger, not with a spoon. The Chazon Ish says that every time you run your finger through it, you have to lift it out, and run your finger through it, and lift it again. And even with all that, still, this is only mutter if it's Lisha D'Rabbanan. What makes something Lisha D'Rabbanan? There, we will distinguish between a Blila Ava, like a bread, and a Blila Raka, like a pancake batter, as opposed to bread dough. So if you make it very loose, a lot of water, and it's very loose, like a pancake batter, that will be only Lisha D'Rabbanan. And you have the fact that you're doing the Shini Kalach Hayad. If you do everything together, then if you need to, it will be Mutter. To make yourselves oatmeal like this, you will not allow, because even though you have all the same coolers, because this whole construction of putting all these coolers is really not so strong, and therefore there's a Torah for a baby who doesn't know how to eat yet, so we will allow these leniencies. But if you just want to make yourself oatmeal with cold water on Shabbos, that we will not allow you to do that, even if you're going to have all these coolers. Next point is cutting up vegetables to small, or chicken, or anything to small pieces. That's the Isser D'oraisa of Tochein. So, we know that Tochein is only if the pieces are small. How small is small? The Rishonim say we have no idea how small is small. So therefore, we want to make sure that the pieces are big. That's point A. Second point in Tochein is that we have a kula regarding borer, that if borer is done la'alter, that is part of what we need to make it derech achila. So similarly, the Rashba says, if you do tochein la'alter, perhaps that would be permitted. Even if it would be very, very small, the Rashba says, tochein is permitted if it's la'alter, because that's called derech achila, it's right before the meal. So the Rama is makel for this Rashba, and therefore it would even be able to be small pieces, but the Achronim don't really accept that so simply, so we're going to try to use that Rashba and only do the cutting up of the pieces right before the meal, but also don't make them so small, make them a little bit bigger, and do it right before the meal. That's how we will cut up our vegetables for the baby. In terms of mushing banana, here is a very unusual Chazon Ish who says that the Isser Midoraisa of Tochein is Mamish. Mushing bananas is an Isser Midoraisa. That's the Chazon Ish, for whatever reason he figures that out. And it won't apply, we won't help to do, it won't help to do all these other, you know, doing a La'alter, it won't help to do, because La'alter is only a Kula, when you're talking about things that are dumya to tochein. But tochein itself, which the Chazon for every reason holds, that mushing a banana is tochein, real tochein, there you will not have the kula of doing a la'alter. So, however, the Chazon Ish, even though he holds this gigantic chumra, he says that if you do a kila'acha yad, it will be mutter gomer. So the Igros Moshe says, I don't really understand why mushing a banana should be tochein at all. But Chazon Ish said it's Lazi D'Raisa, so we'll take that. And Chazon Ish gave me a caveat, a dispensation. If I do Kalach Hayad, so enough to be Machmer as much as the Chazon Ish, not to do Mush Bananas, but if you do Kalach Hayad, Ramosh says you could do that. So Halacha Maisa, if you want to Mush Bananas, do it Kalach Hayad. Apply the Chazon Ish, yes, based on the Chazon Ish. You're right. Ramosha doesn't understand why it should apply. But the Chazon Ish said it, so since the Chazon Ish is the only one who says that it should be awesome in the first place, so we'll take his kula, even though Ramosha doesn't understand his kula. It's a good point.
By taking your finger out of the oatmeal, was that in order to make it Shesi V'Ariv? Or was that... I thought the way Rasul Lewis explained it, that your finger by itself is enough of a...
These are different issues. One is a shinui of finger. A second shinui is the fact that it's shesiv erev. And the Chazon Ish said to constitute shesiv erev, it has to come out. That's how I understood it. Next point, let's talk about diapers. The Rambam writes that Korea and Topher are not just ripping things like fabrics, but it's also medabik niaros, that's Topher, and mafra niaros, that's called Korea. So accordingly, if you have... Velcro is not a problem. That's not attaching or disattaching. It's just hooking things in, if you look at Velcro under a microscope. But adhesive tabs, which are sticky, there's going to be the shayla of Korea and Topher. I'm attaching and disattaching. The Baruch Hashem, kosher, is only a problem if it's a kesher shel kayama. That's in terms of a kesher. Does that also apply to Topher? We're not tying anything here. We're just attaching. Does Topher have this kula that if it's not shel kayama, it's okay? This is a machlokas. And the Ramah cites both shitas, whether it's mutter or asur, if there is a Topher has the kula of ena shel kayama. So it sounds like the Ramah wants us to be machmir and avoid Topher, even if it's not shel kayama. So, therefore, when you put a diaper on a baby, that Topher is definitely not shel kayama, because you're going to take it off the baby after a few hours. However, when you throw it away, and you, especially when they're dirty, I don't want to get into the gory details, but especially when a diaper is dirty, then you always want to close it up well so it doesn't get all over the place. Well, there, you're going to be closing it up, and it's going to stay that way, la'olam vaed, until it disintegrates in the landfill. So that might be taka kesher shel kayama, tofer shel kayama, and therefore it would be very advisable, before you throw away a diaper, not to reseal it to keep it closed, because that will be shel kayama. There are those who suggest that since you don't really care about it, you just want to get rid of it, you're about to throw it out, in fact, that would not be considered shel kayama, but I think advisably that would be something to avoid, closing the diaper before you throw it out. In terms of when you get a new diaper, you want to rip the adhesive thing open to put it on the baby, that would be a question of tofer. So some are mati because the manufacturer, when they made it like this, they intended for you to open it up. So how could you say that you open it up, that was korea? What do you mean? You're supposed to do that. That's not korea. Korea is you have one unit, you rip it apart. You have neurons that were stuck together, you rip them apart. Here it's made to do that. So some are made to open it on Shabbos for that reason. Others say that you should open up the adhesive before Shabbos. And again, if it's Velcro, like many of the modern diapers are, then there's no issue whatsoever. Next, we'll finish with diapers, and let's talk about diaper rash. In terms of ointments, this is serious stuff. And smoothing ointments could be an issur d'oraisa. However, if you do kelachayat, it's only asur d'rabbanan. Well, asur d'rabbanan is still asur. Issur d'rabbanan is still asur d'rabbanan. However, babies, especially if they have a diaper rash, but babies in general have a din of a chol hashem basakana, and therefore you're allowed to do this kelachayat. So halach l'maisa, if a person would have a baby with a diaper rash, how would they put on the ointment kilachayad? They would just take some ointment and just drop it into the diaper, put it on the baby's bottom, not smoothing around. They'll just put a clump there. And as they put the diaper and the baby moves around, it will get where it needs to go. But you put it on, you applied it kilachayad.
It's not even in the
melacha b'chol. Mizasek?
No,
what do you mean? You're saying that's not even kalachayad.
Kalachayad would be like you did with your elbow or something, no?
I hear what you're saying. Okay, great. Practically, what I told you is what we did. thank you. In terms of carrying a baby where there's no Erev, we had this a few weeks ago. It was even more complicated because it was my parents' house in Brooklyn where the question if there is or is not an Erev there. And then it became a new question again about 7 years ago when the Hasidim, there was always an Erev that was a big machlokas. And then 7 years ago or so, there was a new Erev that didn't hold from the flappish Erev that the Hasidim started to use, not like, because they're not bound to Ramosha Feinstein Pesachim. So it became even more complicated. And my daughter's 2 years old and she does walk, we took the baby to shul and she walked all the way to shul, no problem. And on the way home, Abba carry me. And then we'll talk about Abba carry me right now. So what happens if it's an Abba carry me? So the best case scenario is, again, I'm not stating any position about the various Erev in Brooklyn, I'm just talking about in a place where there's no Erev, what happens if you have an Abba carry me situation? So if you could do bribery, that's obviously the best. I'll give you all the candies you want for the rest of your life the moment you walk in the door when we get home. That's the best. If that doesn't work, and it didn't work with my 2-year-old daughter, then get a guy, because we live in a Carmelis, that's one Drabbanon, Amir Lenachri is another Drabbanon, and I won't say it's Makam Mitzvah to get the baby home, but it's Makam Chola. Maybe it is a mitzvah not to take care of your children, maybe even a big one. So certainly Makam Chola, Makam Mitzvah, it's a Shvus to Shvus, Makam Mitzvah, you could tell a guy, please carry my baby crying and screaming into the house. The third option, if you need to, would be pachos midal amis, which is, if you have no other choice, then that will be the thing to do. And I would advise you from my own experience, avoid the situation. And don't be smart and think you can get your baby to shul back. In terms of injuries that a child suffers, so every child has a din of chol she'en bo sakana, therefore you could do Amir L'Nachri for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. So if you need to treat the child with whatever violation of Shabbos you need, then you can ask a guy to do it. What about other Yisrei D'Rabbanan besides Amir L'Nachri, like turning on electricity, Kil'achayad? For example, somebody told me recently that their baby needs to use a nebulizer. They have a cold or asthma, cold, and they need to be using a nebulizer, which is very, very common, especially this time of the year, and you have to turn it on. So if you have a guy turn it on, that's great. If there's no guy around in your building at the time, or you don't live in a building, like you live in a neighborhood, those of you who know what neighborhoods are, so then, will we allow the kula of shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah, makom choli, in a case where it's not just a shvus of, I'm sorry, will we allow an issur d'rabbanan, I take that back, will we allow an issur d'rabbanan even for a chola, even if it's not Amir L'Nachri? So here, Rabbi Sabolovsky said that if you do a kilacha yad, it will be okay. Now, kilacha yad by an isud rabbanan is going to be okay. It happens to be that we could be even more mekel than that. Rav Shlomo Zalman holds that kilacha yad is mutter even on an isud daraisa. So let's say there's a light that had to be turned on, or some instrument needs to turn on a light or a fire for your baby. So you would be allowed to do that kilacha yad according to Rav Shlomo Zalman. According to the Mishnah Berurah, kilacha yad will only be mutter on an isud darabanan. So let's say turning on the nebulizer for whatever reason is only an isud darabanan. I don't know how it works. Then perhaps it would be mutter according to even Rav Moshe. But halacha lemaisa, b'shas hadchak, again, one can, there is, let's assume that turning on nebulizer would be an isud daraisa potentially. If a person would do a kilacha yad, then Rav Shlomo Zalman does allow it, kilacha yad, one drabbanan. Plus the fact that it's a chole, that would be a drabbanan meaning a din drabbanan, b'makom tsar, b'makom choli, that Rav Shlomo Zalman would allow the makom b'shas hadchak. If it's not a shas hadchak, so then we would not allow an isud daraisa to be done kilacha yad. And you should try to ask a guy. In terms of, we'll finish with this point and then we'll do the rest another time. In terms of children doing malacha, you are not allowed to tell your child to do malacha. There's an iser in the Torah, and it actually made its way into the Aseres HaDibros to ask a kid to do malacha. And if he's about to do malacha, you are mechuyev, the Mishnah says, to stop him. And in terms of asking a child to do an iser drabanan, here we have machlokas rishonim about machal katan biyadayim by an isud rabbanan. The Rambam says that it's usher to be machal katan in isud rabbanan biyadayim because called the tikkun rachmana, called the tikkun rabbanan can't daraisa the tikkun. Just like by daraisas, you can't have your child do for you. You can't have a child. You can't give a child an isud daraisa. You can't give him an isud rabbanan. The Rashba, however, has a kula and says that if it's tovas ha katan himself, then you can tell him to do an Isser Durabanan. So we have a Machlokas, the Shulchan Aruch is Machmir, but the Mishnah Berurah brings a Kula, the Kula of Rabbi Kveger, that B'Shas Adchak, you could rely on the Rashba and tell the child to do a Melacha Durabanan for the Tzorech HaKatan. So what does that mean? In practical terms, it means that if the light is on, and you want the light off, that's a Melacha Shein HaTzricha L'Gufa, which let's assume is an Isser Durabanan. And it's the kid's bedroom. So you could tell your little kid, turn off the light so you can go to sleep because it's an isud rabbanan le tzorech hakatan, and that's assuming that there's no other place where they could sleep. It's a shas hadchak. That would be okay. Sorry? Because you don't need to save the filament, and therefore it's a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa. Almost always, turning things off are almost always malacha shein tzricha gufas. Turning things off are almost always drabanas. Because the malacha shein tzricha gufa. However, once a kid is higia l'chinach, then you have to stop the person from turning it off. Certainly you can't ask them to do it, even if it's not your son, and therefore you should always be aware in terms of what people think is always mutter, to tell kids to do things, be aware. If, however, you don't tell them to do something, you just decide sometimes have to do, you just sort of hold your baby in their hands, and their hands happen to hold them near the light switch, and they, on their own volition, play with the light switch. That might be a little bit of a different story. And Be'ezus Hashem, the other, there are another about five, we went through about seven shiurim, there are about four or five to go, so we'll need a shorter time to go over the rest of them. Let's figure out when we'll do that, and then we'll daven mincha.